Blog Talk Radio. This is the news in brief from the United Nations. Amid the biggest reported missile attack on Ukraine in weeks, the UN's Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, said on Thursday that Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant had to switch to backup generators once again after losing all power. This is the first time the site has lost all power since November 2022, but the sixth time that all off-site power has been cut since the Russian invasion last February, IAEA Director General Rafael Grossi said. He added that there is enough diesel on site for 15 days to supply the plant's essential needs, but that the situation at Europe's largest nuclear power station remains critical. In an appeal for action to resolve the conflict and guarantee the safety of Ukraine's nuclear infrastructure, Mr. Grossi said that he was astonished by the complacency of the international community. Each time we are rolling a dice, and if we allow this to continue time after time, then one day our luck will run out, he told the agency's governors. Moves by a small number of governments to legalize the non-medical use of cannabis have led to increased consumption, without explaining the potentially serious health dangers that drug users face, a UN-backed narcotics watchdog said on Thursday. Issuing the warning, the International Narcotics Control Board, INCB, said that the trend for legalization was linked to an eightfold increase in global medical admissions related to cannabis dependence and withdrawal. At the same time, admissions for cannabis-related psychotic disorders quadrupled worldwide, the Drugs Control Panel said. Other worrying trends identified by the INCB include a surge in cocaine production and trafficking in 2022 and in the distribution of chemical precursors that are required to make drugs, including heroin, cocaine, and amphetamines. And in a call for global action to tackle the opioid overdose epidemic, the INCB warned that trafficking in fentanyl and other dangerous opioids is expanding to Oceania. UN humanitarian coordinators have deployed to Vanuatu to help with the aid response, a week since back-to-back tropical cyclones and a 6.5 magnitude earthquake hit the Pacific Island nation. According to the authorities, more than 250,000 people have been affected, which is almost 80% of the country's population. Less than a week after Cyclone Judy forced residents to evacuate from the capital, Port Vila, they were then hit by Cyclone Kevin, a Category 4 storm that brought heavy rain and winds measured at over 230 kilometers an hour, or 142 miles per hour. Vanuatu's 13 islands were then hit by a 6.5 magnitude earthquake that struck 90 kilometers from the second largest city, Luganville. A state of emergency was declared on the 3rd of March. Initial reports indicate that homes, livelihoods, and power lines have been damaged, but impact assessments have been hindered by connectivity problems linked to the emergency. The UN's intervention comes at the request of the authorities in Vanuatu, confirmed Aid Coordination Office OCHA, which said on Thursday that aid staff have deployed to the capital, Port Vila, to support the government-led response. Dominika Tomaszewska-Mortimer, UN News.
Coming to you live from Northeast Jefferson County, Kansas. Your one true voice in Kansas. This is Radio Free Kansas. Good afternoon, listeners. Good afternoon. I hope you're having a wonderful day. It is Friday, so I hope. You know, yesterday, did you do something about the National Day Against Police Violence? Well, if you just didn't get arrested or pulled over, I guess that could you could call that some sort of action. I didn't get busted. Well, we have a great show coming up here from the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and it'll happen after the...
For radio as godless as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
Attorney Sam Grover talks about FFRF's lawsuit against the Ten Commandments at the Arkansas Capitol.
And a panel of black atheist activists explain why they left religion,
and the challenges Black nonbelievers face in today's world.
Well, as I said before, I was rudely interrupted. We've got this morning's, oops, there goes one of those big grainers by my office window. You may not have heard it. Grainers, that's what the professional truck drivers call the farmers when they get on their 18-wheelers hauling grain. They call them grainers out on the highway late at night on their CBs. I was lucky. You're lucky. Fortunately, I was able to get this morning's latest headlines from Democracy Now! And the program will begin after.
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden's unveiled his $6.8 trillion budget proposal for the 2024 fiscal year. The plan would begin the process of trimming $3 trillion from the federal deficit over the next decade by raising taxes on wealthy individuals and corporations and allowing Medicare to negotiate drug prices. Progressive groups praise the White House plan for investing in health care, housing, and the environment while expanding free community college, early childhood education, and child care. But Biden's budget also includes a request for a record-shattering $886 billion in military spending. Republican Speaker Kevin McCarthy has signaled Biden's budget will be dead on arrival on Capitol Hill. House Republicans have yet to unveil their own budget. Biden said Thursday he's prepared to negotiate with Speaker McCarthy at any time. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and other leaders in Israel Thursday, where he called for an independent judiciary and for de-escalating tensions with Palestine while reiterating the U.S.'s deep commitment to Israel's security.
But the United States also remains firmly opposed to any acts that could trigger more insecurity, including settlement expansion and inflammatory rhetoric. And we're especially disturbed by violence by settlers against Palestinians.
Secretary Austin also said he believed diplomacy was the best strategy when it comes to Iran and nuclear weapons. Israel's openly backed military action against Iran. Austin's visit comes against the backdrop of intensifying violence. Earlier today in the occupied West Bank, an Israeli settler shot dead a Palestinian man near an illegal settlement outside the city of Qalqilya. Separately, Israeli forces raided the town of Nilin near Ramallah overnight, arresting relatives of a Hamas gunman and ordering the immediate destruction of his family's home. Palestinians have condemned such demolitions as collective punishment. At least 79 Palestinians have been killed so far this year by Israeli military forces. The UN's humanitarian coordinator for Syria has condemned an airstrike by Israel on Aleppo International Airport earlier this week, which forced it to shut down, complicating humanitarian relief efforts as Syrians reel from last month's devastating earthquakes in the region. Here in the United States, a legislative push to end U.S. military interference in Syria through a war powers resolution was voted down Wednesday. The latest effort was led by Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz and supported by a bipartisan mix of progressive and far-right lawmakers. In Beijing, the Communist Party-controlled legislature confirmed Xi Jinping's historic third term as China's president. This comes amidst growing tension with the U.S., including over the issue of Taiwanese autonomy. We'll have more on this after headlines with historian Al McCoy. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, at least 36 civilians were killed overnight Wednesday in an attack blamed on rebels with the Allied Democratic Forces. The killings took place in two villages in part of the eastern DRC near the Ugandan border, where Congolese and Ugandan forces are fighting rebel groups. In Germany, 8 people were killed and dozens more injured Thursday evening as a gunman opened fire on a Jehovah's Witness congregation in the city of Hamburg. Authorities say the shooter, who fatally turned the gun on himself after the massacre, was a former member of the group. This is the fourth known mass shooting in Germany since 2020. Here in the United States, the Gun Violence Archive has reported 105 mass shootings so far in 2023. In West Virginia, an empty coal train jumped its tracks and caught fire in the community of Sandstone Wednesday, injuring three workers and spilling diesel fuel into one of North America's oldest rivers. A day later, a Norfolk Southern freight train derailed in Alabama, 80 miles northeast of Birmingham. Local officials said no hazardous materials were involved in the crash. It was the third derailment of a Norfolk Southern train in the U.S. since February and came as Norfolk Southern CEO Alan Shaw testified before the Senate's Environment and Public Works Committee. Shaw apologized for the derailment on February 3rd, which blanketed the town of East Palestine, Ohio, with a toxic brew of spilled chemicals and gases. But Shaw refused to commit to ending a profit maximization scheme known as precision scheduled railroading. Unions say the practice involves staff cuts, running fewer trains with larger loads, and shortcuts on maintenance. Under questioning from Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, the Norfolk Southern CEO also refused to commit to granting workers seven paid sick days per year.
Will you make that commitment right now to guarantee paid sick days to all of your workers? That's not a radical demand. It really is not. Will you make that commitment, sir?
Senator, I share your focus on our employees. I will commit to continuing to discuss with them important quality of life issues.
Here in New York, prosecutors have signaled they may soon bring criminal charges against former President Donald Trump for campaign finance violations and other crimes. On Thursday, the New York Times reported Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg invited Trump to testify next week before a grand jury that's been investigating a $130,000 hush money payment Trump sent to adult film actress Stormy Daniels through an intermediary. In 2018, Trump's former personal attorney and fixer Michael Cohen pleaded guilty to charges of tax evasion, bank fraud, and lying to Congress about the hush money payments. Cohen says Trump directed him to make them through a shell company shortly before the 2016 presidential election. On Capitol Hill, a spokesperson for Mitch McConnell says the Senate minority leader is recovering from a concussion and will remain in a hospital for observation and treatment after he fell and hit his head Wednesday evening. The 81-year-old Kentucky Republican sustained the injury at a dinner for the Senate Leadership Fund's Super PAC at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in Washington, D.C., formerly the Trump International Hotel. Arkansas Republican Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders has signed a law dropping a requirement that employers verify the age of children who apply to jobs. A spokesperson for Sanders told the Washington Post the provision was, quote, burdensome and obsolete. Arkansas law allows children as young as 14 to obtain work permits. Republican lawmakers in several other states, including Iowa and Minnesota, have recently advanced similar legislation. This comes after an investigation by the New York Times exposed the forced labor of unaccompanied migrant children as young as 12 at factories across the United States. To see our interview with the report's author, Pulitzer Prize winner Dana Hannah Dreyer, visit our website, democracynow.org. Here in New York, Uber and Lyft drivers have declared victory after city regulators granted a pay raise to drivers following a strike campaign. The fare raise by the Taxi and Limousine Commission announced Wednesday replaces another planned raise that was agreed to last year but blocked after a successful legal challenge by Uber. Last week, New York Taxi Workers Alliance Director Bharavi Desai testified to the New York Taxi and Limousine Commission.
Every day that's passed, that is $1 million that we're collectively owed to this workforce, a workforce that has had to pay for every single penny of operating expenses. Uber and Lyft don't have to pay a dime. A workforce that works not only with economic risk, but also with great risk to their safety and to their life every single day.
In more news from New York, Sheldon Thomas, a 35-year-old black man from Brooklyn who was wrongfully convicted of murder, has been exonerated and freed from prison after nearly 19 years behind bars. Thomas was only 17 when he was arrested and accused of killing a 14-year-old boy in 2004. Detectives on the case misled a witness into identifying Thomas using a photo of another person with the same name. When the botched identification was brought up in court, the judge said at the time there was still probable cause to arrest Thomas because the photo had enough of a resemblance. Thomas was sentenced to 25 years to life. His exoneration follows over two dozen others after new investigations were launched by the Brooklyn District Attorney's Conviction Review Unit. And in New Jersey, a monument honoring the abolitionist hero Harriet Tubman was unveiled in Newark Thursday, replacing a statue of Christopher Columbus that was removed in 2020 as racial justice protests erupted nationwide in response to the police murder of George Floyd. Washington Park has been renamed Harriet Tubman Square. Among the guests at yesterday's ceremony were rapper Queen Latifah, who's from Newark, and Tubman's great-great-great-grandniece, Michelle Jones Galvin.
Many call her an American heroine. In our family, we simply refer to her as Aunt Harriet. She is Harriet Tubman, greatest conductor of the Underground Railroad. Aunt Harriet said, "I reasoned this out in my mind. There was one of two things I had a right to, liberty or death. If I could not have one, I would have the other. And no man should take me alive."
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report.
And now, coming up, our latest edition of the Free Thought Radio program from the Freedom From Religious Foundation.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Stan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Welcome to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And this is the March 9th, 2023 episode of Free Thought Radio. Grant Blaschka with Audio for the Arch is our engineer in the Stephen Uhl Friendly Atheist Studio in Free Thought Hall, which is the national office of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin.
And Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, emphasis on that from, because there can be no true religious liberty, no true freedom of religion, if you do not have freedom from religion, particularly freedom from religion in government. So that's why my mother and I named this group the Freedom From Religion Foundation, to point out that that's an overlooked understanding of this constitutional principle. And we work not only for state-church separation, but as a national association of free thinkers, like-minded individuals who are personally free from religion. And we are about 40,000 members. We would love to have you join us today. If you're not a member, if you would like information, go to ffrf.org, and we'd be glad to send you a copy of our newspaper and brochure about our almost 50 years of activism. And if you are a member, thank you.
And we have quite a show today. In the second half, we're going to hear from a number of black atheist activists: Candace Gorham, Cynthia McDonald, Andre Forbes, D'Angela Morant, and Rogers Phibbe were on a panel hosted by Mandisa Thomas, explaining why they left religion and describing some of the challenges that African-American non-believers face in today's world.
And before that, we're going to catch up with FFRF Associate Counsel Sam Grover. He was on recently to talk about a different lawsuit, and because he handles litigation, he's going to talk about a legal brief we filed this week in federal court challenging the state of Arkansas for displaying a Ten Commandments monument on state capitol grounds.
Along with the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the plaintiffs in that lawsuit include an atheist from Arkansas, a rabbi, a Presbyterian elder, a Wiccan, as well as the American Humanist Association and the Arkansas Society of Freethinkers, who think the monument is unconstitutional on legal grounds as well as on historical grounds.
Who know the monument is unconstitutional. What do you mean? And talking about how religion is trying to dominate society, on our weekly TV show, Free Thought Matters, this week, we speak with the journalist and writer Elle Hardy. She's Australian. She's the author of the book, Beyond Belief, How Pentecostal Christianity is Taking Over the World.
Pentecostalism, she tells us, is really growing much faster than we realize. We asked Elle Hardy how many Pentecostals there are in the world today.
The official numbers are somewhere around 600 million. I would say that it's getting much higher than that already, and that's out of about 2 billion Christians worldwide. We're talking now 25%, maybe up to a third, global Christians being Pentecostal. That number was 6% in 1980. So that's why I really call it a revolution, because this is huge. I mean, in Brazil now, which everyone thinks of as, you know, the great Catholic country in the world, literally as we speak, Pentecostals are overtaking Catholics in pure numbers. When you think that Catholicism got there 500 years ago, Pentecostalism got there 40 years ago. That's really huge, and it's having a seismic effect beyond just beyond the church pews.
So Pentecostalism, as Al told us, with its focus on the so-called Holy Spirit and emotional submission to authority, is a real threat to reason and science. You can watch that episode of Free Thought Matters right now on the Free Thought Matters playlist at FFRF's YouTube channel.
And if you happen to live in one of the 13 major cities where Free Thought Matters is broadcast on local television, you can watch that show with Elle Hardy this Sunday morning. For stations and times, check ffrf.org/freethoughtmatters. Or just go to our main homepage, ffrf.org, and look for the news drop-down. You'll find it there.
So, Dan, there's a lot of news this week.
So the Freedom From Religion Foundation is applauding Biden's repeal of a religious discrimination rule. It's a rule that under the Trump administration that allowed federal contractors to discriminate in the name of religion. That Trump rule removed important workplace protections for employees of federal contractors. So they, you know, people might have been fired because of their sexual orientation or gender identity or because they were in the wrong religion. And the employers under Trump's rule could point to their religious beliefs to justify that. Well, Biden is going to repeal that. And FFRF joined a coalition of 67 other organizations urging the Biden administration to correct this misstep.
And this week, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, it was really Senior Policy Counsel Ryan Jane, provided testimony in two different states on vital issues. And the first one was close to home, where our arch-conservatives are trying to undercut vaccination policies. They want to suspend a policy that would require students, K through 12 students, to receive the chickenpox vaccine or document that they have already gotten the infection. And it would also introduce meningitis at, I think it's at seventh grade, and booster shots. And that is a killer. It's rare, but it's a killer of young people. 10 to 15% of people who get meningococcal disease every year die, and 20% of the survivors have permanent side effects. And so our Wisconsin legislator Nass, who is a ardent Christian, doesn't think that we should do that in Wisconsin.
He's one that has the cross in his
window. Yeah, he has a cross in his room, in his office. And then Ryan also sent written testimony in Maryland where there's this unconstitutional provision barring atheists from holding offices or trusts. And it's a ridiculous contradiction because the religious test against atheism comes right after saying there shall be no religious test ever required except for atheists. And in fact, we knew Roy Torcaso, Dan, who won the 1961 unanimous case before the Supreme Court in Maryland, saying that this was unconstitutional. It was a religious test for public office when he wanted to be notary public, but they've kept it on the books. So that's how hard it can be to challenge anti-atheist strictures in our laws. And there's an awful lot going on. There'll be more next week at that state level. But we also want to let you know that the Freedom From Religion Foundation proudly joined 200-plus advocates in an urgent appeal to UN officials to hold the U.S. accountable for the wrecking of abortion rights with Roe versus Wade. And today in the news, there was it pointed out that President Macron is urging that abortion rights be enshrined in the French Constitution, taking a lesson from what happened with religious ideologues getting hold of American courts. So we're glad to see this international support and concern for abortion rights. And we now see Florida Governor DeSantis about to introduce a 6-week ban. Florida has a 15-week ban. And if you look at a map of the United States where abortion is banned, it's the whole South, except for Florida, that offered some refuge for women having unwanted pregnancies. And we'll be asking our Florida members to try to stop that. So very bad news on the abortion front.
We have talked on this show before about the Bangladeshi American Abhijit Roy, who was murdered in Bangladesh when he was on a book tour. We've talked with his wife, Bona Ahmed, a couple of times on this show, who survived this brutal attack, which killed her husband. It almost killed her. Well, on the 8th anniversary of his assassination, which was February the 26th, 2015, we are appreciating that the State Department is still determined that the killers of Abhijit Roy should be brought to justice. The U.S. Department of State's Diplomatic Security Service is offering an award up to $5 million for information leading to the arrest or conviction of any country or any person involved in the murder of Roy and the attack on Ahmed. We're pleased that the State Department has not lost its focus after all these years. Abhijit Roy, of course, was critical of religion. He wrote the first book in favor of gay rights.
Explaining the science behind being gay.
All of that in Bangladesh. And so he was brutally killed with machetes. So we're glad that our State Department has not lost sight of that tragic murder.
So speaking of anniversaries, Wednesday, March 8th, was an important anniversary for two reasons. It's International Women's Day. Unfortunately, we don't see too much celebration anymore in the United States, but internationally, this is a huge day, and it needs to be. But it's fitting that March 8th also happens to be the anniversary of the McCollum versus Board of Education Supreme Court decision handed down in 1948. And this week, it was the 75th anniversary of this landmark decision. The reason it's so fitting is that this case was taken by Vashti McCollum, and she liked to point out that she was proud to have been named for the first and only exponent of women's rights in the Bible. There's a story of Vashti who refuses to display herself before a mob of drunken men when her husband, the king, orders her to.
In the book of Esther.
Yeah. So anyway, she is the one who, as a mother, took and won the first case ruling unconstitutional religious instruction in the public schools on behalf of her son, Jim. Jim is now in his 80s. He became an attorney. He is a life member of FFRF. We've had him on the show. But this McCollum Board of Education case started when the normally stoic little boy came home in tears, vowing never to go back to school when they had religious instruction. He was treated like he was in detention. He was teased by the other kids because he was the only one not taking religious instruction during the school day. And she lost at the first level, the second level, and persevered, and then got an 8-1 ruling in which I like to quote Felix Frankfurter's dissent, which said, "The public school is at once the symbol of our democracy and the most pervasive means for promoting our common destiny. In no activity of the state is it more vital to keep out divisive forces than in its schools." And, of course, the McCollum decision and other decisions against religion in the schools are imperiled. So we want to celebrate. And there's a blog up at freethoughtnow.org that I wrote where you can get links to how to order a Peabody Award-winning documentary about the case, Vashti's book, her son's book, their interviews, and make yourself familiar with it because it's such an important case. And I also did a blog this week about what happened in Tennessee. where they have ruled basically illegal drag shows that children might see, among other things. And I posted a picture of my twin brother, Ian, in his kilt and pointed out that they entertain. He's part of a Scottish dancing group, and they go around the state and the country, including to public governmental buildings like capitals, and dance for children. And under the Tennessee rule, why wouldn't he be illegal? So you can read more about that at freethoughtnow.org. And then I also did a blog about Governor Abbott, our old nemesis in Texas, who literally told FFRF and atheists to stay out of Texas, about this strange statement that he made last week when he was on a tour to promote giving public money to religious schools. And he went to Christian schools, and this is what he said. Our schools are for education, not indoctrination.
That sounds pretty good.
Sounds like something we'd applaud. Well, he's talking about, he thinks there's woke indoctrination. He thinks that we shouldn't say slavery is bad in our public schools. There shouldn't be any mention of LGBTQ at any level in schools and so on. So that's what he thinks is indoctrination. He wants religious indoctrination in the public schools.
Which
so
he would consider
so
to be
ironic.
Education, basically.
And then he said, oh, this is all about parental empowerment. And he's the guy last year who literally ordered the Department of Social Services to hunt down parents providing medical treatment to transgender children. And they ended up, it was a terrible situation with one mother there. So we have got our eye on Governor Abbott.
You can find those blogs on the freethoughtnow.org blog, which is a product of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We're going to take a break, and then the Associate Counsel Sam Grover will describe the legal brief we filed in federal court this week over the Ten Commandments on the Capitol grounds in Arkansas. And then we will hear from five black atheists who explain why they left religion, and they'll tell us about the challenges, special challenges that African-American nonbelievers face in today's world. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
Hi, I'm Steve Pinker. In my book, Enlightenment Now, I show that the world has become a better place as reason has been overcoming superstition and tribalism. But the values of the Enlightenment are under attack. That's why I'm a proud member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of free thinkers working to keep state and church separate. Please join me in supporting the Freedom From Religion Foundation to ensure that our government is driven not by religion, but by reason.
Margaret Sanger's motto was, no gods, no masters. This is Free Thought Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. And we have on the phone with us our staff attorney, our works on litigation, Sam Grover. Welcome back to Free Thought Radio, Sam.
Hello. As always, it's good to be back.
Yeah, we just had you on to talk about our victory with Governor Abbott in our lawsuit, and now we want to have you explain what is going on with our lawsuit in Arkansas over the Ten Commandments. There was a development this week, correct?
Yes, absolutely. So as a reminder for everyone, Arkansas passed the law to put up a Ten Commandments monument back in 2015. Then Senator Jason Rapert was sponsoring this bill and was, you know, publicly saying that this was about honoring history and tradition. And then privately, it's pretty clear that this is really meant to promote his personal religious beliefs on government property.
Rapert is also the founder and president of a group called the National Association of Christian Lawmakers. So that's kind of a giveaway.
Hmm. Yeah, I would say so. A number of different parties ended up suing the state, including FFRF on behalf of four Arkansas citizens and a couple organizations, including the Arkansas Society of Freethinkers. The ACLU sued in a separate suit, and the Satanic Temple sued in a third suit, or rather they became interveners in the case. So anyway, there are four different parties in the suit, and all of these parties this past Monday filed for summary judgment in the case. So we got to brief the court on why this Ten Commandments monument is unconstitutional.
So FFRF wrote its own brief on behalf of four plaintiffs and some groups, including ourselves, correct?
That's right.
Well, by FFRF, you mean Sam Grover, right?
Well, Sam, yeah.
Sam Grover wrote the brief.
On behalf of FFRF.
Right. So, yeah, with some collaboration with our local council and others.
Okay. And so I know that there was a strong theme in the brief to try to show that there is no tradition or long-standing history with Ten Commandments. Do you want to explain what was going on there?
Well, yeah, let me just explain. The Supreme Court recently kind of blew up Establishment Clause jurisprudence and has taken us back, decades and decades to a time before the often used Lemon test existed. So that was the test developed by the Supreme Court that said, you know, when you're looking at government action like this, you look to the purpose of the law, you look to its effect, the effect of a Ten Commandments monument on government property, and then you look to entanglement, government entanglement with religion. The Supreme Court recently blew that all up in the Kennedy v. Bremerton case and said, no, what you really need to do is just see if a government's action fits within a history and tradition of this country. And fortunately for us, when we're briefing the court on Ten Commandments monuments, we can at least say, well, you know, there is no established history of laws ratifying the Ten Commandments in this country. Ten Commandments monuments are a relatively recent phenomenon.
It's like from the 1950s or 40s, right?
Yeah, the 1950s, the same time, when we have the second Red Scare and we have the government adding "In God We Trust" as the onto our paper money and changing the national motto.
And we had this ridiculous movie by Cecil B. DeMille called "The Ten Commandments," which is really how we ended up with all these monuments everywhere, right? He got in cahoots with a Judge Rugemeyer in Minnesota, and FFRF was the group that uncovered all that history way back when in an early lawsuit against these Ten Commandments. So,
exactly. Yeah. So these do not have a long and storied tradition within this country. There's nothing, that would say that in this country, you know, the founders always thought that Ten Commandments monuments would be constitutional, despite, crafting clearly in the Establishment Clause that government shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. So there's nothing in history that says that this should get some sort of exemption to the First Amendment. And what Arkansas has done here is a law respecting an establishment of religion, right? It's quite literally violating the plain text of the Constitution.
And as we always like to point out, the First Commandment alone shows why the Ten Commandments do not belong on governmental property, because it's not the business of the state of Arkansas to tell people which gods to have or how many gods to have or whether to have any gods at all.
Yeah, that's right. So there is this sort of secondary argument running through the whole brief that Arkansas filed and in their expert report about how the Ten Commandments are somehow like the basis for American law. And that's just patently false. It's a ridiculous claim. There are so few of the amendments, even appear in modern law, right? Honor thy mother and father is not there. Don't covet property is not in there.
Or your slaves.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So the majority of the commandments have no effect or run counter to American law. We are a country whose law is secular and meant to not push religious beliefs on everyone.
So you also say in this brief that it's religious divisiveness. This has created huge division in Arkansas, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. From the very beginning, this proposed Ten Commandment monument was fought by locals, including the plaintiffs that we have in our case, who come from a diverse background of religious and non-religious beliefs. They all opposed it. They all went to meetings about it. And the state of Arkansas hasn't heard the end of it since.
And you can read this. We're out of time, Sam Grower. Thanks so much for writing a great brief and for joining us. And you can read that brief or the press release about it under the news link at ffref.org.
Thou shalt not violate the First Amendment. Thank you, Sam. After the break, we're going to hear from five black atheists who explain why they left religion and then tell us about the special challenges that African-American non-believers face in today's world.
Hello, this is Janine Garofalo. Are you tired of right-wing politicians who desperately want to impose their religious beliefs on the rest of us? I know I am. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Join the fight and call the Freedom From Religion Foundation toll-free at 1-800-335-4021. That's 1-800-335-4021. Or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation website at ffrf.org. That's www.ffrf.org. Proud to be an atheist, Janine Garofalo.
Speaking freely, thinking freely. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. During FFRF's 45th annual convention last November in San Antonio, Mandisa Thomas, who's president of Black Nonbelievers, chaired a panel of Black atheist activists, asking them why they no longer believe and what challenges confront African-American nonbelievers in today's society. All of the panelists are also part of Godless Gospel, which performed later that day, and we're glad to say will be performing next October at our 46th annual convention here in Madison, Wisconsin.
And the first, that was actually in October, our convention. Candace Gorham is a licensed therapist, and she's the author of the book, The Ebony Exodus Project. She had given her story earlier in the day, so her remarks on the panel were very brief.
Okay, so if you were in my talk earlier today, you heard a little bit about what happened to me. I was raised Jehovah's Witness. I was confirmed in the Methodist Church. I became ordained as an evangelist and a prophetess at like 18, 19 years old, you know, casting out demons and speaking in tongues and praying, fasting for weeks at a time, days at a time. I did all that. And I'll tell you all again, I'll extend the offer, $9.99, get you a prophecy. And just, you know, see me after the show. And so part for me, a big part of becoming an atheist and non-believer was a result of just studying. I was going through a lot of things in my life, and just my life wasn't matching up with what the promises were, you know, what God and the Bible and my pastor and everybody was telling me my life should look like. It wasn't. And so I thought, I must be doing something wrong. And so I just went back into doing more studying, more researching, and I just slowly but surely studied my way right on out of Jesus. And now I'm here.
And here is Cynthia McDonald, an activist with Freedmen of Chicago.
I was actually raised Episcopal, and I went to college like at 18 years old, and I got saved. While I was saved, I found a non-denominational church, and I swear I was getting like prophecies left and right that I'm going to be an evangelist, and I'm going to travel the world, and I'm going to tell people about Jesus and all that other great stuff. And to undercut Candace, I will offer anybody a prophecy for $8.99.
When you want a real prophecy, it's worth the extra dollar.
Real prophecy is subjective. Anywho. So So as I was in church and I was listening to everybody telling me I was going to do all these great things in the name of Jesus, I decided that maybe it would be time for me to study to be a minister. So I started ministerial classes, and that's when we really got into the bare bones of the Bible, and we started to actually study the problematic stuff of the Bible that I did not know that was there. And so I started asking questions to my ministerial teachers, and I was like, hey, how do we rectify with this? Hey, how about that slavery stuff? Hey, how about that God killing everybody because he's mad and stuff? And, you know, after a while, they would try to answer my questions, but then they would say to me, Sister Cynthia, you just need to pray more and have more faith. Right? By the time the ministerial classes ended, I did all of my tests, and I did really well because I actually like studying and reading and doing research. And I was told, everybody's going to get their caller except for those two, myself and a doctor. And they just said that God said that we were not ready to get our callers. I said, was it God or was it you? So, right. So about like a year or two later, I ended up getting laid off from my job, and I went back home to Chicago. And that's when I started questioning even more about, you know, this whole Christianity thing. And I'm like, I don't really think that it's working for me. So I started exploring other different things. Like I started still looking at ancestral worship and crystals and a little Wiccan here and there and spells and schmells and things of that nature. And then I was like, yeah, this is bull too. So I actually was told about a little bit more of Buddhist philosophy, and I actually ended up becoming a secular Buddhist. And through study and research with that, I actually found myself becoming an atheist. Matter of fact, I remember the day that it happened. It was 2018. I was trying to chant, and when I tried to chant, I just started to cry. And the reason why I started to cry is because I realized that God does not exist. And then I cried even more because I was like, but wait a minute, I was actually thinking that God was the one who actually caught me every time that something bad happened in my life. And then I realized that, no, that was not God, that was you. I gradually, you know, stopped crying and blubbering all over the place. And then I realized, I said, you know what, now that I can admit and say, no, I just don't believe anymore, I'm okay.
And that was Cynthia McDonald. Now, here's Andre Forbes. He's a former gospel songwriter, producer, and pianist who is now an atheist and the musical director of Godless Gospel.
I'm a musician, and my role, I started out in the church playing, and that was pretty much my life. Like, I actually built a career around music with just gospel music. So I, as a young age, I started playing for our kids' choir at the church. I really enjoy music. It's been a part of my life, and it's pretty much been what I've centered my whole life around in with Christianity. So it's kind of been a little bit of a mess when it comes to music because I spent the majority of my life just listening to Christian music, just playing it, just being in environments where that's always there. I guess I'm kind of a late bloomer in the sense of where I got exposed to different types of music, just secular music in general. But I would say as late as high school, college, is when I really started to actually get into secular music. So I was very much in a bubble. That's the best way I can put it. But once I got to around that age, I started kind of questioning a lot of things, like being in the church and my morals and everything just kind of being taught to me and intertwined with all of that. I didn't really question anything at a younger age. But once I got older, I really just started having questions. And I'm like, you know, well, why isn't this happening in my life? I'm reading this in the Bible. And this is why I'm saying I could relate to a lot of what Candace was saying earlier. It was like, my life is not really reflecting what the Bible is saying my life should be. So it's just like, something's not right here. So fast forward maybe 2 years from that, I'm really questioning things now. And I'm in a really deep position in church where I am like the musician for the church. I'm like going to Bible study every week. My parents are really deep in church. My whole family is like religious. Like either you're a minister, you are a singer, you're a musician, dancer, or something in church. I've just always been around church my whole life. I really, really got to a point where this is not working for me, but I didn't know who to talk to. And it was a really hard place in my life because this is all I knew. I mean, church was all I knew. Like, trying to believe in God is, like, all I knew. So I kept on trying to do it, kept on trying to do it, and actually pushing more into it is what pulled me out. Because I wasn't trying to become atheist, but I was really trying to seek God. I was praying. I was reading my Bible, fasting, just everything. I was really going at it really hard. And I kept hitting a brick wall. And I think the very last prayer that I really prayed was like, God, I need you to reveal yourself to me in a way that I can comprehend, because this is not working for me right now. And so I kept on pushing that prayer, and nothing happened. Nothing happened.
Nothing fails like prayer.
Yeah, so nothing fails like prayer, like she said. But I did that, and I gradually started backing away from things. And I was noticing that nothing's changing. It's like my life still fine. I'm not being cursed. Nothing bad is happening in my life. And I'm like, okay, so I'll just keep going away. You know, God, you got my number if you're ready for me to come in. But, you know, apparently he lost my number, and I just kept backing away. And I'm like, okay, well, it seems to be nothing to this. So I came out of it, and I started just having more of a peace of mind, because I'm like, I'm not bound by people telling me that I need to be doing this and kind of like criticizing me for doing all of this kind of stuff. It's just my life was good in the belief or in Christianity, but coming out, it was so much more peaceful because I'm not worried about going to hell. I'm not going to, you know, heaven, it doesn't matter. It's just like I've learned to be a good person, you know, just for being a good person. So, yeah, there's a lot to my story, and I don't want to take up everybody else's time, so I'll probably talk about it a little bit later, but I'm going to pass it on right now.
Next, we hear from DeAngela Morant, a businesswoman from Florida who is a wonderful singer in Godless Gospel.
Well, this should be really quick because I feel like we are all the same person. There are just so many parallels between all of our stories. I grew up as a basically non-denominational Christian in Florida. Went to private Christian schools where we learned everything wrong. Mm. And I don't know if any of you have heard of the ACE curriculum, but it's very anti-science. It's so problematic. But in any case, that's what I grew up in. And I just feel like I must have a hard head or just be really slow, because when I meet other non-believers, everybody talks about how when they were children, they were asking questions and the Noah's Ark just kind of didn't make sense. I was happy to believe all of it. I was with you, Andre. We were just in a bubble, and I was like, yeah, that's fine. You know, it was presented as if it was truth. And so I didn't even question until I was an adult, a wife, a mother. And really what led me to questioning was I've always been a singer, and I was a worship leader. And the 80-20 rule at my church, every church I've ever attended, more like a 95-5. We were just, if any of you have ever been worship leaders or on praise teams, you are worked to death. You have 3 and 4 services a week, rehearsals. And I'm finding myself with my family, you know, my kids are eating pizza or whatever I can, you know, figure out. I'm not really having time with them, and just so exhausted from ministry, which led me to say, well, that's one prong of it. And the other was, I remember a family member reached out to me because they were having a financial crisis and needed some help. And I had just written a check to my church that didn't allow me to be able to help that person that I wanted to help, because it was one of those, please, you know, you got to give sacrificially. So I did. I wiped everything out to help whatever the cause was at that moment. And so these things kind of led me to take a moment and say, am I doing this right? I'm vaguely aware that there are other denominations, there are other approaches. I wasn't looking to leave religion. I wasn't looking to leave my church necessarily, but I just wanted to make sure that, am I really following the scriptures? Because I feel like maybe there's a way to do this where I don't have to be broke and I can spend time with my children and, you know. Yeah, so I started studying, like everybody on the stage, and once I got over, the biggest hurdle was that fear of hell. That was what was keeping me from even really looking into it, because I'm like, I'm going to be turned over to an apostate mind, and oh my goodness, I'm going to be reprobate. Once I got past that and really started, you know, figuring out and looking at extra-biblical texts and the history, and I was just like, oh man, I made a pit stop at like deism for like 5 minutes, and then it was like the bottom fell out. So that's my story.
And that was DeAngela Morant on the panel of Black Atheist Activists. She's also a singer with Godless Gospel. We're going to take a break, and when we come back from the break, we're going to hear from the final panelist of Black Atheist Activists, Rogiers Bibby. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be right back with the final segment of Free Thought Radio.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace.
Let's restore respect for America's secular roots. Help the Freedom From Religion Foundation defend the wall of separation between state and church. Join us at FFRF.org. Freedom depends on freethinkers. Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
And welcome back to the final segment of this week's Free Thought Radio. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we are continuing with the panel of Black atheist activists who spoke at FFRF's convention last fall.
And now we hear the final panelist, Rogiers Bibby. He's known as Ro. He's a composer and a musical producer. He was, at the time, the president of Black Nonbelievers in Washington, D.C. After telling his story, he then goes on to explain some of the challenges that African-American nonbelievers are facing in the world today.
I'd say all of that, plus being a Black queer man, same-gender-loving. I was raised Moravian. I'm from St. Croix in the Virgin Islands, so U.S. Virgin Islands, anybody knows where that is. There was a lot of missionary work that went on down there and throughout the Caribbean, and so you'll find a lot of Moravian churches in St. Thomas, St. Croix, and in Jamaica and a few other places. And when we moved to the States, I continued doing that. I'm a musician, and so in addition to just being trained and playing music all my life, I also played in church since forever. And I think around 2008, around the time I turned 30, I started to just really dig into what it was that I believed, particularly as I was working my way through my own sexuality and trying to find space for a theology that accepted me and so forth. That was the impetus, but studying the Bible and the sort of New Testament criticism, textual criticism, all that kind of stuff, and just, you know, otherwise just kind of just opening my eyes and asking questions and finding out that people didn't have really good answers for that was the beginning of that process. And I stayed in church. I played in church, believe it or not, on and off, up until the pandemic, and I was very much an atheist. The church that I played at through my transition was 2004-ish to 2012, and then I left and I went and got my master's and stopped. But then when I came back to this, I was overseas and I came back to the States, and after just a few months home, I ended up getting looped back in because people knew me and they were like, oh, can you come and do this? You know, I need somebody to play for Sunday. And I ended up doing that for another couple years. And so I was playing in church. Thank God for the pandemic. It is true that we have the largest proportion of Christian folks out of all the racial and ethnic demographic backgrounds or breakdowns, but that's not to say that we don't have skepticism in our communities. It's not to say that we don't have a tradition of doubt when it comes to, particularly as you mentioned, various effects of the systems of white supremacy that have come to define the lives of our people in this country and throughout the diaspora. And so in the tradition of Black power, in the tradition of uplift and community along the lines, along racial lines that are trying to break free from bondage of white supremacy and trying to reconnect with our lost histories and trying to really organize essentially for political political thrift essentially. We have long established traditions of skepticism, but there's that fourth wall in this community. It's okay to be skeptical about this. It's okay to be skeptical about patriarchy. You can clap for that. We're skeptical. But at the end of the day, that fourth wall of, you can't be skeptical about God, because that God is real. And that is a huge barrier to holding us back into our higher thinking and our liberation, which is, like I said, one of the things that defines our experience. I think that it's so important that we exist, even if we weren't in community, right? But especially because we are in community, it's so important that we exist in, from my perspective, in the tradition of the free thought and the free thinkers that have preceded us, particularly our African-American free thinkers, right? Every part of our story, I talked about, you know, us being here as people coming from Africa in our provenance, but at the end of the day, every part of our story, even coming here, is defined by somebody who was breaking away from the thought of submission to Christianity and submission to this type of power dynamic. And so the idea that we just extended a step further is nothing new. It's absolutely nothing new, and our community needs to know that, as well as other communities that are looking at us that are saying that, no. We have skepticism that is a part of our legacy. So I just think that that's the thing. You can't fight white supremacy without taking on these issues. You just can't.
And that is Roger Fibby, and he is the vocal coach of the musical group Godless Gospel, which is produced by the Freedom From Religion Foundation. In fact, all of those panelists are singers and musicians in Godless Gospel, and we're happy to announce that Godless Gospel will be performing again this year at our convention here in Madison, Wisconsin.
Yes, it starts on Friday, October 13th, so that's a lucky day. Huh. Continues all day Saturday. We are just putting the registration up next week, and we'll have a roster of people speaking, but they include Mary Ruth Ziegler, who is the expert, legal expert on abortion rights and an advocate, Liz Winstead, who is the co-creator of The Daily Show. She's a comedian and specializes on pro-choice entertainment. We have Emily Olson, who tried to get rid of prayer and had a death threat in Michigan. She's going to get her Nothing Fails Like Prayer award. Amanda Tyler, who's head of the Baptist Joint Committee and created Christians Against Christian Nationalism, will be getting an award. We will have Godless Gospel, and we have a number of other invitations out. We're waiting for confirmation on some of those, and we'll have the usual legal reports and year in review and ask an attorney and clean money drawing, etc. So you can find out more soon at FFRF's website under the Outreach and Convention link. We have a little bit of information up, but not the registration yet.
October 13th through 15th this year. So that's our show for today. Free Thought Radio is recorded in the Stephen Ohl Friendly Atheist Studio. We want to say hello to listeners in Pennsylvania and New Jersey who listen to WOOM. Also in Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania to WZML. And in Madison, Wisconsin, right here to WIDE and WMUU. In Janesville, Wisconsin, WADR Community Radio. In Bryan, Texas, in College Station, Texas, KEOS. And over in San Marcos, Texas, KZSM. In Columbia, Missouri, to KOPN. Eugene, Oregon, KEPW. Bellows Falls, Vermont, WOOL, Black Sheep Radio. Kingston, Rhode Island, WRIU 90.3. And in Ithaca, New York, and Watkins Glen, WRFI. I know many thousands of you are listening to us on the podcast, so please give us a thumbs up on your provider and tell your family and friends and everybody else to find out more about Freethought Radio at ffrf.org/radio.
And you can find out more about the new podcast, We Dissent, featuring secular female attorneys working for state church separation, also representing FFRF, wherever you get your podcasts. And you can ask for information at our website, FFRF.org. And you can also simply click the join link if you are not a member, and you will get 10 issues a year of our newspaper Free Thought Today, and you will support our vital work to keep religion out of government and social policy. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.